Coming up this week on the Vacationland Theme Park Podcast, Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights announces two new mazes for Hollywood. Disney pulls a plug on its new luxury hotel for now. And SeaWorld finally gets some good news as attendance and sales rebound in the second quarter. Plus, a little bit later on, we're going to discuss with Brandis and John in depth all of your options for the newly announced Knott's Berry Farm season pass holder structure. From an undisclosed location near the Pacific Ocean, this is the Vacationland Theme Park Podcast. This is the Vacationland Theme Park Podcast on the week of August 19th, 2018. Visit our travel partner, Magical Vacation Planner by Caris, for help planning out your next vacation getaway to any of the following: Walt Disney World, Disneyland, Disney Cruise Line, Adventures by Disney and Aulani, Universal Studios Orlando, and Royal Caribbean, Princess, Carnival Cruises, and more. Get your free consultation by visiting Magical Vacation Planner by Caris on Facebook or by visiting magicalvacationplanner.com/staff/Caris, C-A-R-I-S-S dash Milano. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of the Vacationland Theme Park Podcast, a discussion of the latest news, reviews, and history from all of the Southern California theme parks and beyond, brought to you by our team of theme park fans and experts. My name is Chris Ramirez. I am the host and executive producer of the Vacationland Theme Park Podcast, and this week I am joined by our associate producer and Knott's Berry Farm reporter, Brandis Strottman. Hello, Brandis.
Hello.
Alternate John and Knott's Berry Farm reporter, John Strottman. Hey, John.
Hey.
From our vlog series, Karen Fan's back.
Hello.
Welcome back, Karen. And historian, poet, warlord, raconteur, and author of Skipper Stories, Dr. David Marley is back with us again. Hey, David.
Hey there. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks everybody for joining us. Welcome back, everyone.
I meant to say that too. Thanks for having me.
Well, we thank you for being here, Karen.
Better late than never.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Some people, I swear. Well, welcome back, everyone. Thanks for joining us again. I want to kick this off before we go any further. Our one-year anniversary is coming up, and as you may have seen on our podcast, on our Instagram and our Facebook page, and we'll give you tips on how to connect with us a little bit later on in the show. As you may have seen, we are doing a giveaway for our one-year anniversary. I was looking for Brandis came up with the idea of doing the giveaway, and then I was looking for an excuse to do a giveaway. And I realized that our one-year anniversary is coming up. So our one-year anniversary prize pack giveaway, so far we have a pair of Snoopy birthday ears, and we have a copy of Dr. David's book, Skipper Stories, True Tales from the Jungle Cruise. And we'll add a couple more things. Ken and I are going to go to Universal Studios and do a vlog in a couple of weeks, and we're going to go ride Jurassic Park, the ride, before it becomes Jurassic World, the ride.
So sad. FYI, I can't win the prize pack. Yeah, I just wanted you all to know this.
Karen asked if she could win the prize pack, and I told her.
Can I win the prize pack?
No, nobody here at the table. You guys can all enter. Nobody here at the table can win the prize pack.
My wife's not at the table, technically. Can she?
Your wife can enter.
How are we entering? Can we use fake Facebook?
Hey, I've set up ringers to enter this competition for me.
I have not thought ahead that far. I am collecting prizes at the moment. So I don't. It may be an email thing. It may be we'll do a little bit of podcast trivia. I'm not entirely sure yet, so we're going to have to figure.
If you could, on your blog for Universal Studios, go on the Forbidden Journey and record the Dementors and Harry saying in Parselmouth to leave them alone because he's using the wrong words. Oh. I just need proof.
Okay.
Parcel tongue.
You know, on a side note.
Oh, wow. John corrected Brandis on
wow.
This is unprecedented here.
But on a side note, when I was in New York and I was watching Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, the Dementor scene that they did is so absolutely amazing. I highly recommend you all go to New York and watch this.
By the way, did you like how Karen did that? You just threw that in there, like, just very casually. Like, by the way, when I was in New York on Broadway, watching the Harry, you should go.
It's going to come to Segerstrom Center eventually. I will see
I'm not
see
sure it,
it
will.
It will?
I can't, no. I cannot give it away, but the theater was entirely redone for the show, and it is just absolutely amazing. I highly recommend it. I highly, highly recommend everybody go and get tickets. But if SpongeBob SquarePants, the musical, comes, you should absolutely watch that. It was amazing.
Love SpongeBob. You can talk into the mic.
That's all I want to say is I love SpongeBob.
It was so good.
Who doesn't love SpongeBob, though?
We played it on the way here this morning. My wife doesn't, and God bless her, she's incorrect.
David's wife is here also.
This morning we played a song, a Tiny Tim song from a SpongeBob on the way driving here.
Have you heard the musical?
I have not. Does it have Tiny Tim's having a wonderful time?
I would know. I don't like
it. Probably
these
doesn't.
These are all songs written by like super famous people. They've all contributed songs. So every song is written by some super famous-y person.
Like Squidward.
It'd be funny if it was written by a famous person who wasn't a musician.
They're all
like,
musicians.
This next song written by Stephen Hawking. You're like,
let me rephrase that. They're all musicians.
That would be funnier.
So it's really awesome.
I want to
watch it.
I just want to mention, once again, because of a schedule, we weren't sure who was going to be here this week because, John, associate producer John is still, dealing with some stuff. So he's fine. He's just, he's very, very busy right now. So he's still not able to be here. So I'm still pulling in people kind of at the last minute. We're doing another 5-person show again. And so this is going to be another one of those really interesting, shows, because I wasn't sure who was going to come, and I invited 2 people, and they both said yes. So yay! I'm super excited.
I feel less special. How do you feel?
I feel like you could have just said, "Hey, FYI, don't need you anymore."
I know we need you.
Last time we did a show together, I sat here thinking Karen's much funnier than I am. If you're gonna add one guest,
which is why I always love when Karen's here, because she just the entertainment value just goes through.
Way funnier.
This is already free, yeah. And then like so this like Karen is like value added funny,
right?
Like I love when Karen's here.
Right.
Thank you.
All right. All right. So that's coming. We're also going to do Karen. Where did we go yesterday? We went somewhere.
We went to That's From Disneyland. We road tripped all the way out to the valley.
The valley. Yeah, that was
okay.
Which
I
was
wanna
surprisingly
know.
Closer than I thought it was going to be.
If you could
wait, what part of the valley?
Sherman Oaks. Yeah.
So. But,
look, I have family that live in like Woodland Hills, so I feel like every time I'm driving out there, it takes like forever. And so yesterday, I was
no,
like,
everywhere in LA is 20 minutes away.
I don't think they're getting it.
Yeah,
it was. No one's getting.
There was, by the way, I'd like to point out that there's nothing in the valley. I drove around for 20 minutes looking for McDonald's, and I couldn't find anything.
That's incorrect.
Okay,
I happen to, my parents are from there, so I happen to love the San Fernando Valley.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That end too, the Sherman Oaks, North Hollywood, Burbank. That end.
I love Burbank. Burbank's great. Burbank's
the other end of the valley.
I lived in Burbank for a couple of years as a kid, and if I had to leave where I live now, that's probably where I'd want to go.
Yeah, Burbank is a cool place.
It's just
place.
The building, the housing, like even the cheap housing is just so beautiful.
We know a person that lives in Burbank. That
I do enjoy Burbank.
We do.
And
we do.
Well, your David's parents and Richie Valens are from the valley. So.
Yeah.
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 Rich Valens was from Pacoima.
And I guess, my siblings are
too. Did you guys know each other?
They were all born there as well.
You know, I moved to Indiana too for like just a year, and I got that all the time when I'd meet people is they'd be like, do you know this actress? Do you know that actor? How many famous people do you know? Like
all of them. That's the answer. All
like
of
I
them.
Live in Orange County.
So
you'd
be like, oh my God,
LA.
I brunch with them on a weekly basis.
Yeah, you totally shouldn't lie. You totally shouldn't lie about that.
The giant banquet hall, every famous person and every non-famous person.
And we yoked them together.
The next question is about
we went
off
the rails
beaches.
Fast. This will be edited out.
Yep. Speaking of, we have a friend that is a photographer, and he spent the day yesterday. I told my wife he was shooting Matt Damon yesterday.
Did he go to jail?
He did.
He has a very, very rough life, as you can see.
Yes.
All right. So, so for those of you that don't know what the heck we're talking about here, That's From Disneyland is an exhibit, and it's actually going to be going through. So we try to release this podcast on Monday or Tuesday. Sometimes it doesn't come out till Wednesday, because we all have jobs. And but this is going to be running through Friday the 24th, and this is an pop-up art exhibit in Sherman Oaks, California. And what it is there's a collector who spent 30 years of his life. His brother grew up disabled, and when he was able to, and we found out later on, he is a talent agent, and he represents people like Danny Elfman and Alan Menken and Robert Sherman, so these very famous musicians. And so through the years, he was able to acquire some money, and then as a result of that, he always had these great memories of going to Disneyland, and his name is Robert, I believe his name is Robert Kraft, and he just spent 30 years collecting bits and pieces from Disneyland. And when I say bits and pieces from Disneyland, I mean he spent his life collecting the sea monster from the submarine voyage and the giant submarine voyage sign. And he has the
canoes
and the Bertha May
keel
boat.
He pretty much set up the Haunted Mansion at his house.
Seems terribly sketchy.
So he told this great story. So he is selling a part of the lot. And so he just decided that he doesn't need this stuff anymore. His son has grown up. He's got a daughter.
No, I heard heard that it's because his daughter has a
daughter has a rare disease. Yeah.
Yeah. So
his daughter has a rare disease. And so he just wants to spend as much.
Okay. Cause I was judging him until that part.
Yeah. Well, he brought it back. You know, his son grew up playing, you know, Mario Kart in a rocket jet from Disneyland. And so his daughter has a rare disease. He wants to spend as much time with it, quality time as he can with her. And so this stuff just is important to her. Great story that he told, cause he shows up every once in a while and he'll do little tours. He's got 8 original 1964 Small World dolls. And the story goes that, you know, when you buy some of these things through back channels, he got a phone call in the middle of the night that said, "Hey, I've got 8 original 1964 Small World dolls. Do you want them?" Never met the guy before. And so he met him in a dark parking lot in the middle of the valley. The guy rolled up his trunk and there were these 8 functioning Small World dolls.
Wow. Did they mention what they're worth?
The lot was about $30,000.
Okay. Cause I was actually, the last time we were at Disneyland, we were on a Small World. I was thinking, I wonder if you could sneak in the middle of the night and steal one of those and auction it on eBay, and how much would it be worth?
You could not.
Yeah.
No, you would.
Disney stops people from auctioning off their costume pieces.
Yes.
Right. But this is through the Van Eaton galleries, which they have done other Disney auctions before. But I was wondering how Disney feels about this. But I mean, they've got all kinds of, if you're interested at all in the, history of Disneyland, he's got a people mover. He's got stuff from Disney World. He's got original, drawings by John Hench and Herb Ryman and,
He has an ice cream cart. Ice cream cart.
I would love to know how that stuff got into his hands. Remember
this is stuff that Disneyland used to just throw away. Huh. I know for a fact that the Bertha May and the Gully Wumper, the 2 keelboats and the submarine Sea Monster used to sit behind the Indie Show building. Like, they sat behind there for the first 3 years I worked there.
Wow.
And then they put them in a warehouse and then decided to sell them.
But bringing it back very quickly, you guys, those 8 Small World dolls are hella creepy.
And they work when he turns them on. And I have video of them on.
They are so creepy outside of like show contacts. I mean, they are pasty white with these dark eyes, and they just stare at you.
But those dresses, their outfits were hand sewn by Alice Davis, which makes them even more valuable.
And so, you can tell exactly where they're from. They're from the very final, all white sequence.
Oh, okay.
As an Asian, we wear white only for funerals. And there's the little Japanese doll in a all white kimono bowing with pale white skin, dark, creepy guys.
They've got an ice cream cart. They've got the original Jose that works. We'll talk and sing and
do the show. But you just said they had an ice cream cart, and then you said they have an original Jose. So did they steal this man to serve their ice cream?
No, Jose the tiki room.
Jose the tiki bird.
Host.
How do you, yeah.
Clearly, it's been a while since you've been to the Tiki Room.
I think we went to go see it the last time we were there. Did we go to the Tiki Room?
Did you go into the Tiki Room, guys?
No. I'm sorry, I forgot. I was on a podcast. So I was shaking my head no.
How dare you take them into Disneyland and not take them to the Tiki Room?
Well, yeah, because the older Jose.
Okay, not everybody at once.
Sorry. I know the older birds, they move them in the back. So there was the older version of Jose was still at the Tiki Room.
Right.
They move them farther back when they refurb a newer.
And they've got a lot of original. Bird. I mean, but the Imagineer stuff is the stuff. And I'm assuming that a lot of that stuff was sold, you know, after these guys passed away.
Stolen.
So there's original, what's his name? Mark Davis art from original concepts of Pirates of the Caribbean and just things like ride attraction signs and menu boards and just, I mean, everything from a Dumbo the Flying Elephant that used to hang in his son's room to Mr. Toad car. It's just, anyways, the exhibit is called That's from Disneyland. And it goes, the auction is the 25th and 26th. I'm working on a video right now. We got a lot of footage. I spent a couple of hours there over 2 days.
This is where I want to make a plug. So they had this little tiny pamphlet that's like Kodak guide to photos at Disneyland. So if anybody out there has one and they don't want it and they would like to gift Karen, she would love it.
One thing I've learned in all my research interviewing, I don't know, 50 or more skippers, and none of you Disney people should comment, but I'm stunned at how many cast members just robbed that place stupid when they left. Like, I sat there thinking, man, I have like my 3 name tags. That's like what? That's what I have.
Not to incriminate.
But people are like,
anybody.
Oh, I have this sign. Here's a picture of, I'll post this on my Instagram later, of a ham. It's in my first book, the story of how this ham got to no longer be at Disneyland.
Yes, Karen.
And it's hanging up in a bar.
Tread lightly.
I just think that we like to keep small reminders of our time there, you know, to reminisce and look back fondly.
Yes.
So I think that's a good way of putting that. You know, might have stuff.
So Karen, what did you, sorry, I'm going to go back a little bit. One of the coolest things that's there, and David, you'll appreciate this as a historian, is the original model for Progress Land, which eventually became the Carousel of Progress.
Oh, cool.
And it lights up and it's in its original packing crate. And it's a really cool exhibit. Karen, you were there. What did you think of this exhibit?
I enjoyed the exhibit, but I will say I wasn't as super crazy, as some of the others. I finished my own Karen tour a lot faster than the rest of my party did. So I just sat in some old attraction cars and vehicles and, just waited for them.
Great.
I have a question. If you could walk away with one thing there, what would it be?
The people mover.
The people mover. Either the people mover or the hanging boat, the flower boat from the Tiki Room. It's the one that comes down when the flowers
The people mover.
Yeah.
My second option would be the Skyway car that they have.
The Skyway
that
car.
Beautiful one. Those are my two. I'd take one.
Yeah,
oh, but I would take a third. I'd take the van.
Oh yeah,
fully functioning van. I would just drive it right off and attempt to drive it home.
It's locally. Cool. You'll see it in the video. It's Global Van Lines used to sponsor the lockers at Disneyland, and it was designed by Bob Gurr, who designed the Autopia cars, and he designed the monorail. It's a fully functioning. It drives, and the story goes is that it used to be parked outside of where the lockers is, and Walt would get the keys to it in the morning, and they didn't drive it down Main Street. It just sat in front of where the lockers are, and he was always jealous of his brother Roy, because his brother Roy drove a truck, and he would take the keys in the morning and he would just drive it down Main Street because he could, and he would sort of envision what it was like to just be a regular guy and have a regular truck driving job.
There's got to be a picture of that somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure there is.
Yeah, but interesting.
So anyways, it was a very cool exhibit. Once again, I'm working on that video, so check it out if you want to see what that exhibit was all about.
I thought you were going to say, if you dare.
If you dare.
Be prepared to wait in a line since it's closing soon.
Yeah, so there's Wednesday and Thursday. It's still open. I'm going to try and get this podcast up as soon as possible. When we came out of this, and this is in the middle of August, 90-plus degree heat in the valley. It's at a former Sports Authority on Woodman and Riverside in Sherman Oaks, if you're familiar with Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. It's a massive, massive building. So this line went, when we came out, we waited about 45 minutes just before it opened to get in and get pictures and stuff. But the line went down the end of the building, around the side of the building, traffic brakes so that cars could come in and out of the parking lot, and then wrapped around the back end of the building. I saw someone that said they waited about an hour and a half to get into the exhibit yesterday.
How much does it cost?
It's free.
Oh, it's free. But it's this, they didn't have any cast member or staff, making traffic brakes. And so the line, the folks in the queue were really good about policing themselves, you know, and kind of stopping and moving without kind of like walking traffic. So I thought that was really nice.
And it opens at noon. So Wednesday, Thursday.
It's always nice when crowds behave on their own.
Yeah. It was a very well behaved crowd. There were a few people that, you know, as you're taking pictures, they're just situationally clueless and will walk in front of you and stand there as you're taking your picture. But, for the most part, unlike going to actual Disneyland, the crowd was pretty well behaved. But it opens at noon every day, and the Wednesday and Thursday it's open still. And then Friday and Saturday are the actual auction dates. So if you're in the market for an AstroJet from Walt Disney World, this is the place to go.
Or a trash can.
Or a trash can.
Like a trash can is only about to go for like somewhere between $1,000 to $1,500. So, you know, you've got a chance.
That's ridiculous.
I like the sea serpent.
Cost, it is not a functional sea serpent trash can.
Well, it is. I mean, it's totally functional.
You could still put a thing in there and, you know.
Yeah, some of these things were like the big ticket items were just, I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Yeah. That model was between $15,000 and $25,000, and then you had to ship it. I can't imagine what the shipping costs on those things is. But anyway, David.
Yes, sir.
Wrapping up our discussion from the last show, how was, talk about Tiki Oasis. How was your final thoughts on that?
Tiki Oasis was freaking amazing. It's a 4-day long convention, festival, and celebration of everything tiki. And it's held in San Diego every year, and it was my first year going, and I got to do a presentation about the Jungle Cruise, Surprise, surprise. It was great. My wife called it very specific cosplay.
Did you bring me a souvenir?
Yeah, the most important part.
Where are our souvenirs?
Did you not agree to bring us tiki mugs the last time you were there?
No, are you kidding me? Oh. There were so many vendors there. So I bought like a cool vintage Hawaiian shirt because I got there with two shirts.
So that's great for you.
It is. And that's the important thing.
But what about us?
That's the important thing.
Where are our stuff?
This is great
clearly,
for me.
Clearly David has his priorities.
Yes. Yours is at my house. I left it there.
Awesome. I'll go pick it up on the way.
I'll bring it at a later time.
Very well.
It was cool. But there was bands playing outside. They took over this whole hotel. And this big pool area, and they had a big stage, and there was always bands, and there were burlesque shows at night that my wife had to go to for work reasons, and I had to escort her. It was awesome, huh, honey? That's all I get. And this is the head nod. And but it was great. I did a talk, and it was sold out. And
how
a
many
friend
people
of,
did you were there for you to when you're
there
speaking?
Must have been over 300.
Dude, that's
it
awesome.
It was in a big room.
Were you like a rock star? Did they throw like tiki mugs and like tiki shirts at you?
Tiki underwear?
Nope. I got. Wherever we went,
I was trying to keep it family.
The rest of the weekend, people would like wave and yell stuff. They're like, "Oh my god, I loved your talk!" So that was kind of
Tell us about Tell us about your discussion.
So I talked about the Jungle Cruise and how it was their theme was South Sea cinemas. So it's like how movies influence tiki culture, and so I talked about how what movies influence the Jungle Cruise. So I started with Bambi because that obviously is the. Is the reason why
the Fast and the Furious? No, wait, wrong Jungle Cruise.
Wrong Jungle Cruise. But I talked about African Queen and Casablanca and 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, which has some interesting tie-ins because they made it right before they made Disneyland.
Did you record your speech?
We did. Huh. My wife did.
Maybe we could throw it up on the Facebook page.
It's like an hour. You can. I'll throw up clips of it. I don't want to torture you, poor guys. But it was fun. But I went outside. A buddy of ours wanted to get in early. So I'm like, yeah, I'll sneak you in. And I opened the door in this huge convention space, and there was hardly anybody in the hallway. I'm like, oh, you told me you sold out. And there's nobody here. And I go, where is everybody? She's like, oh, we're ready to let them in. Is that okay if we let the crowd in? And I'm like, there's no crowd. She's like, oh, it's outside. And it didn't. I looked, and it wrapped around the building. So it's cool. So. I felt the pressure to be funny. It was great.
I kind of wish we had gone with you so I could be like, oh, I'm with Dr. David.
Karen is really good at that. I've seen her in action.
You are more than welcome. Next year, you got to come because it was parties and music literally till 3 a.m. You're in your hotel room and you just hear, like,
that's
it. Am I going to get some sort of VIP badge or something? Like, with your face on it?
They gave us VIP. They treated us, the people that run the Tiki Oasis treated us great.
By the way, that sounds like my worst nightmare.
Why?
Just the 3 a.m. thumping music.
And then at 9 a.m., they have hangover yoga. So you wake up, you do hangover yoga with Elvis, the Mexican Elvis. Elvis, if you've never seen Elvis.
Brandis, are we in?
Yeah, please.
All right, we're going to be part of your entourage next year.
People change their outfits like 3 or 4 times a day.
Oh my God.
Like,
I had a Hawaiian shirt
for the day, and they're like, no, you got to have like 3 or 4.
We need to start shopping now so we can be properly prepared.
There's more tiki mugs. Shag had a pop-up store, and he was there selling stuff. Guys I really like, Big Toe was there, and a bunch of other, like Tiki Tony was there. And it was cool to see them all and hanging out and have a drink.
It's a very, very, very popular event.
I was a little sad I'd not done it before this moment, but I.
Wine shirts everywhere. Wine shirts
it was
and
great.
Moo-moos.
And lots of booze.
I learned so much.
I
want to
go for the Hawaiian wear, the booze, and the yoga, please.
Go for the booze. Stay for the booze.
I learned in going
yoga
on
in the
middle. Tiki
Oasis. My friend and I used to do yoga for shots.
You know, they have beer yoga. I have a friend
in
Florida,
that.
And you go to a brewery, and you do morning yoga with beer. Like, it's just right next to you.
I could get into that kind of yoga.
You know, it's incorporated.
Hot yoga with beer would be awesome.
What were you gonna say?
I think that's a liability issue, you know.
I learned in going on the Tiki Oasis Facebook page and people talking about their outfits, there is a difference between a muumuu and a caftan.
There is, yes.
There is.
There was a giant parade of caftans. Maybe 70 to 100 women walked by in caftans in a parade around the pool. It was a wild, fun scene.
I'm Googling that right now.
I'm actually shocked that you didn't know the difference between a muumuu and a caftan.
Why would I? I don't wear either.
It's a caftan?
Caftan.
It's bikini or no-kini for me.
Oh, well.
Right?
All right.
Pants for you, the better be.
So that sounds like fun. Maybe we'll go check it out next year. Maybe I'll just send these guys to go check it out. We'll see.
We would love to.
Karen is just interested in being in the entourage. Thanks for sitting through that. And we are going to go ahead and we're going to move on to park hopping.
Welcome to the Magic Kingdom of Disneyland. There are several ways to visit this happy place. If this is your first visit, you may enjoy the guided tour.
Welcome to Universal Studios Hollywood, the entertainment capital of LA.
Welcome one and all, y'all come have a ball, things are very fine, riding on the old Knightberry line.
All right, park hopping is our new segment. Brandy is still looking up the difference between a caftan and a... and a moo-moo.
I see the difference
the
now.
The very specific difference, yeah. All right, so we're going to actually switch it up a little bit. Karen, we're going to start with you because I want to save David's story for last. But SeaWorld got some good news in the second quarter. What's going
on? Wow, that's new.
Right?
I guess I will be the lead off today because we have to save David as the best for last.
Starting with the best first. You start strong.
That's all right.
The ocean. We live for it, we fight for it, all of us, together. SeaWorld.
Well, SeaWorld attendance and sales make a strong comeback in the second quarter. So after years of disappointing attendance and finances, SeaWorld's attendance and sales jumped in the second quarter, giving investors hope that the company is finally on the mend. SeaWorld has been losing customers since the 2013 documentary Blackfish raised questions about the company's treatment of killer whales and trainers. The amusement park operator has long defended its practices, but eventually decided to end theatrical orca shows and orca breeding. Since then, the company has emphasized its wildlife conservation efforts and invested in new rides, park experiences, and marketing. Attendance jumped nearly 5% in the second quarter, ending June 30th, with 290,000 more guests visiting SeaWorld's 12 parks than in the same quarter last year. And through July, SeaWorld saw 90,000 more guests passing through park turnstiles compared with the year before. Executives reported Monday. During the second quarter, revenue also rose nearly 5% to $391.9 million compared to $373.8 million a year before. Interim CEO John Riley attributed this the second quarter strong results to new pricing strategies, a continued focus on marketing, and well-received new attractions, including the recently opened Electric Eel Coaster in San Diego. The results come on the heels of a strong first quarter when attendance and revenue jumped by double digits. Attendance rose nearly 15%, while quarterly revenue rose by 16.5%. The second quarter, though, is a more credible reflection of the company's performance, given that it includes the start of summer when many more of SeaWorld entertainment parks are open. The attendance growth also is an improvement over a dismal 2017 for the San Diego and Orlando marine parks, which saw visitation fall by double digits, according to a report released earlier this year documenting 2017 attendance at the world's top amusement parks. While the company will not break out performance by park, lease payments that SeaWorld San Diego makes to the city for its Mission Bay location show a marked uptick over the last year. The payments, which are tied to SeaWorld's admissions and food and beverage sales, shot up 19% during the first 6 months of this year compared with the same period in 2017. In a move to improve its bottom line, SeaWorld has been working since 2016 to aggressively cut costs. I think if you guys don't remember, you might want to go back and listen to our previous podcast on this self-serve option.
Yeah, self-serve snack stands.
Toward the end, Riley said Monday that the company had reached its previously stated goal of $40 million in cuts that it had hoped to achieve by the end of this year. In addition, SeaWorld is now looking to trim $50 million more in cost, but Riley did not identify how that would entail.
It's all going to come from the food carts.
Self-service everything. Self-service gift shops. I'm all for that.
Yeah, I know.
That's called stealing.
Yeah.
So, or reappropriating.
If they can't be bothered to have employees watch you, then you should be able to take one thing.
That's well, that's
all right. I'm behind that.
That's the crazy thing about those self-service kiosks, because that's literally one or two, or maybe if you're lucky, three people at a register. Everything else is just grabbing. You just grab it and walk away with it. I mean, hopefully you walk away with it to the register, but there's
nobody. I really
want
to know, you know, like if they had numbers on like, you know, have because of the honesty program have sales been better.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like popcorn costs nothing. So if people are stealing popcorn, they're not really losing much. But David, the people that do pay.
David had a question.
Did you, in your article, did it say it was, they had 90,000 more people? Wow. Yeah. They bragged about 90,000 extra people.
Well, they're bragging about 200. Like Disneyland does that in a week. Like Knott's does that in, you know, so they're talking about 290,000
for a quarter.
For a quarter.
Yeah. That's still,
which is not great, but I mean, let's be honest. The numbers are on their way up, which they've been either flat or stagnant.
What
for a
I
very
wanted
long
to point
time.
Out was that there was some not so much love for the, amusement attractions,
there
right? That
not.
They had put
no,
in,
I
like
admit,
the electric eel, but
I love
it
that
seems,
song.
But it seems that it has done the trick and it, has it brought
does.
In people.
It does.
So,
it,
you know.
Well, at least that's what SeaWorld is saying. Like SeaWorld is saying that the new attractions are what drives driving attendance. And so I wish they would pick one or the other, because if they're going to go full bore, I mean, then they need to go as a fully immersive ocean themed theme park like Marine World did, you know, although they closed. But I think they kind of need to pick one or the other. If they're going to be a Marine park, great, be Marine park, and just live with the consequences of that. If not, you know, do a little bit more to theme. But I'm glad for SeaWorld. I'm glad for SeaWorld. I'm glad that I'm happy that these things are
good
looking
on you,
up
SeaWorld.
On, you know,
and you've never watched Blackfish? Have you not seen?
I don't care to, because I know that there are interviews with trainers who were working there at the same time as some of the other ones who not admit, but talk about how the people that appeared in Blackfish were all ex-employees that have, not all of them, a good portion of them had a grudge against the company. And a lot of the stuff that they talk about in Blackfish was stuff that SeaWorld, I mean, that all marine parks did. And, you know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, but that SeaWorld hasn't done in 30 years, like the live capture of orcas and stuff like that. Like some of those things, it's just not a very, in my opinion, it's just not a very honest documentary.
Right.
And
they produce. I wouldn't say it's not necessarily honest. I would maybe say it is not the most balanced.
There we go.
Documentary.
Most documentaries are that way. That's the one
I
thing
think
when
see
I
see people, have gotten
people
you.
Are like, oh, I saw this documentary and now I'm not eating this. And I'm just like,
all right.
Did you do any other research?
Chris, I think they've gotten you. Okay, answer me truly. Do you or do you not currently have an orca in your backyard?
Don't tell him.
Do you? Do you not? Do you not? Do not wait for the translation. Answer the question.
I can neither confirm nor deny that I have an orca in my backyard.
I just want to say I've never seen Blackfish, and I was against SeaWorld with the dolphins and the orcas way before it was cool.
No, absolutely.
Trendsetter.
Go back to the beginning of the podcast and Brandis will talk about it. Like she's been against SeaWorld from the beginning. I mean, it worked on us. We bought SeaWorld annual passes and we're going to go back for Halloween and we're going to go back. They just, we'll do a story on it as it gets closer to the holidays, but they just signed the, characters for the rights to the characters from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
The Rankin Bass ones?
The Rankin Bass
Shamu's
ones.
Really?
Shamu's
jump with the red nose.
Shamu the red nosed whale.
Antlers. They'll put giant antlers on Shamu. But yeah, the Rankin Bass, so they're going to be their Christmas characters, and we're way more excited about that than two adults should be. But,
that's cool.
Yeah. All right. So
are you guys really adults?
I just want to see the elf that wants to be a dentist. That's what I'm waiting for.
Herbie! Aren't you finished painting that yet? There's a pile up a mile wide behind you. What's eating you, boy?
Not happy in my work, I guess.
What? Do you mind telling me what you do want to do?
Well, sir, someday I'd like to be a dentist.
Right?
Yes.
Yes.
Dentist? All right.
Moving on. Let's go next over to, let's go to Brandis. Two new mazes were announced for Halloween Horror Nights. Brandis, what's going on at Universal Studios?
Okay. So beginning on Friday, September 14th, Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers takes a stab at Universal Studios.
Oh boy, this is on the heels of our Punapalooza last episode.
Good night. Oh, so God. He takes a stab at Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights, bringing the notorious slasher to Universal Studios Hollywood and Universal Orlando Resort in all new mazes inspired by the iconic horror film. Based on the fourth installment in the classic slasher series created by John Carpenter, the mazes will transport guests to the suburban town of Haddonfield, Illinois on Halloween nights, where Myers has escaped Smith's gross...
That's fine. Keep going. Keep going.
Okay, where Myers has escaped Smith's Grove's sanitarium and is hungry for revenge. This time, he relentlessly stalks his niece Jamie as his next victim, stopping at nothing to kill her. Guests will follow Myers as he escapes the mental hospital, encounters his first victim at Penny's gas station and diner, and wreaks havoc. Oh, no, it doesn't say wreaks havoc. Wreaks terror on Haddonfield.
But I'm sure it'll involve havoc wreaking as well.
All set to Alan Howarth's ominous, I can never say that word, score. The maze will include horrifying scares by Myers in his classic featureless white mask and navy jumpsuit, with guests dodging his bloody knife at every turn. Halloween fanatics can expect a cameo by Myers' psychiatrist, Dr. Loomis, and other famous characters from the film as they try to escape the bloodbath. Do you want to discuss that before I move on?
Yeah. Okay. So let's stop.
Wait, if we're going to discuss this, I have a huge question first.
I thought you said you were going to go to the restroom.
So
yes, Karen,
I'm not a big horror fan.
Okay.
I think when I was younger, I did watch the movies because, you know, peer pressure and everybody's like, oh my God, it's so cool. We have to. So I may have watched a little bit of Freddy Krueger and Mike Myers and the whole bit. So I don't know if this is why, but why is he stalking his niece? Does he just go around stalking family members every movie?
I think it goes back to something. So here's what's happened. So Halloween is the, I'm not a big horror fan. Halloween is the one that I'm the least familiar with.
No, I like scary, like paranormal movies, alien movies, which we'll get into, slasher movies,
which we'll get into in the next part of the story. But yeah, it's the one I'm the least familiar with. I think it's the one that a lot of people are the least familiar with. Jamie Lee Curtis was in the original, but I think it's as the movies have progressed. So there's Halloween 1, Halloween 2, Halloween 3, which is universally panned. Nobody seems to enjoy that one. But, and then so they've been going in progression with these mazes throughout the years. And so I think it has something to do with the story of, you know, he does stalk.
He hates his family. He
stalks. David, have you ever seen Halloween?
A long time. I saw the first one a long time.
Do you know anything about the plot of this movie?
I just remember thinking, how does Jamie Lee Curtis keep getting work? That was my only question. And why has she had the same haircut for 40 years?
So basically, we don't know why, but we just think that in every
movie. So is that the movie with all the topless girls?
No, that's Friday the 13th.
Those are called the good horror movies. I don't.
I know he has like a hockey mask on.
Yeah, that's about all I know. He's got a blue jumpsuit and...
Wait, at the end of one of those movies, don't you see his mother's head in a cave or something?
That's Friday the 13th.
It's the one where when you fall asleep, he gets you, right? Jason gets
you. No, that's Freddy.
I knew that one. Okay. For the longest time, I kept thinking Mike Myers.
And then suddenly Wayne's he's World? A shark.
Yeah,
and he's
me too. That always gets me.
I got
chewing on
confused.
Roy Scheider or something.
I thought like he was in the movie.
Yeah, me too.
Like, so he's I married not. An axe murderer or something.
Yeah. So apparently, Wayne's World is not the same.
Here's the quick Wikipedia recap. On a cold Halloween night in 1963, 6-year-old Michael Myers brutally murdered his 17-year-old sister, Judith. So yes, he does target,
his family.
He was sentenced and locked away for 15 years, but on October 30th, 1978, convenient. while being transferred for a court date, 21-year-old Michael Myers steals a car and escapes Smith's Grove. He returns to his quiet hometown of Haddonfield, Illinois, where he looks for his next victim. So that's the synopsis of the first one. So I'm assuming he targets family members.
For putting him away. Because it was a cutesy act.
It was the most adorable homicide.
Do we know why he killed
his
sister?
That's what I think.
No, go watch the movie. I don't know.
I'm afraid to watch the movie.
Leave a comment on our Facebook page if you know this.
Yeah, if you know why the if you're familiar with the plot of Halloween. Again, this is one that I don't think so. I mean, everybody knows Friday the 13th. Everybody knows, you know.
We didn't do our due diligence for this episode.
Yeah, I just assumed that somebody else
would have to know.
I had less than 24-hour notice, man.
All right, Brandy, let's move on to the, because there is a second maze that was also announced.
Okay. Universal Studios Hollywood will bring guests into the light as part of this year's Halloween Horror Nights event featuring terrifying new mazes inspired by MGM Pictures' supernatural horror film Poltergeist beginning September 14th. Directed by, is that Toby or Tobe?
I don't know. I'm going to go
okay,
Toby.
So it's directed by Toby or Tobe Hooper and produced by
Toby Hooper.
Thank you. And produced by Steven Spielberg. Why does he spell it that way? Poltergeist garnered critical and consumer success when it first premiered in 1982. Characterized as one of the scariest films of all time, this groundbreaking movie paved the way for a new era of supernatural ghost stories that will come to life for the first time ever at Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights. This living representation of the film will take guests into some of its most iconic scenes and encounter memorable characters that spawned their first true nightmares. The mazes will lure guests to the Freeling family house built atop a cemetery where malicious ghosts threaten the lives within. From the underground graveyard to ghostly apparitions, guests will come face to face with infamous scenes from the film, including the iconic flickering TV screen, menacing beasts from beyond, and pool filled with floating corpses.
Cool.
As guests cross into the light, they will find themselves surrounded by the surreal landscape of vanishing walls, floating furniture, and a creepy clown with a menacing laugh. In a rush against time, guests will be forced to make it back to the world of the living or forever be trapped. Additional details about Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights will be revealed soon. For more information about Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios Hollywood and Universal Orlando Resort, visit HalloweenHorrorNights.com. All tickets and vacation packages are now on sale.
All right. So Brandis, I'm going to kick this over to Brandis real quick. So you say you like movies about...
Yes.
The spiritual world.
Yes.
Does this maze, hearing about this new maze, is that something that you'd be interested in?
Yeah, I'd have to rewatch the movie. I haven't seen it in so long that when they said it was built on a cemetery, I'm pretty sure that it's an Indian burial ground, not a cemetery.
Yeah. Pet Cemetery.
It was a real cemetery. We watched it 3 weeks ago, showed it to our girls.
Okay.
It's a regular cemetery.
So I want to point out two things first. When I hear Into the Light, I'm thinking, at first I was like, oh, is this like a nice maze for people who are afraid of scary things? You know,
because that's what you have in place.
Because when you go into the light, it's something nice. And then I was like, no, sound very nice at all. But the second thing is, as an Asian person, I want to point out to you that if you're ever house hunting, it's terrible feng shui to buy a house on top of a cemetery. So probably the first clue that you should not move into that house, you guys.
I think that's a global thing.
I thought also, it was pronounced feng shui.
That's
the white
Chinese way of saying it. So, and also by default, that includes Indian burial grounds.
Oh, that's even more so.
That's the worst.
And you should probably stay away from places where gruesome murders have also occurred.
It's actually a law, at least in California, that if somebody died in the house you are buying, they have to disclose it.
I thought there was like a limit though, like after like X amount of years, you didn't have to disclose it anymore.
I do not know that much. I just...
Also, if the cops haven't found out, you don't have to legally tell anybody somebody's died in that house. That's just something I've picked up.
So if I have a hidden body renovating buried, I don't have to disclose
yes,
it.
Yes, while renovating. Yes, that's how it happened. All of this is going to be edited out. I pray to God.
Not everybody knows how to operate.
Let's pull the conversation back here. So let's talk about the maze. This is one of those films that I cannot watch by myself in the dark.
This is the one that's there here.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Again,
is.
Not I think a it's fan their of back. Horror stuff. So haven't really watched this.
I think the next one is their back.
Haven't really watched this. But based on what it sounded like, it didn't sound so creepy.
If you've seen Poltergeist,
it is. No.
Her description scared the hell out of me. In my head, I'm like, that I would go to Universal just to go to that
one.
It
is like, it starts off like this normal house and then like weird things start happening. Like the chairs start like zooming across the floor, or like stacking themselves.
The TV comes on and she gets pulled through the TV.
Yeah. So, like there's possession and
I'm certain that the movie is very terrifying, but based on, you know, just what you guys are telling me, I'm like, oh, so I'm walking and a chair flies by. Okay. That seems kind of like startling and like, oh, I almost got hit by a chair. But so far I'm like, okay, I'm walking by flickering TV.
You're home alone. You're doing dishes and you turn around and your chairs are stacked.
Okay.
She's got to watch it in context. You got to watch Poltergeist. You will not be disappointed.
Yeah. Well, I know you don't like horror. It's spooky horror, not a like Michael Myers kill you horror.
That's what I don't like slasher. I like.
So the reason I was so quiet is I was looking up the plots of the other Halloween movies. There is no plot to the other Halloween movies. It's just, it's Michael Myers has a knife and he's going to come and kill you. And there's the Haddonfield Memorial, the mental hospital figures a lot. Dr. Loomis is the guy that put Michael Myers away. Michael Myers is killing people. That's the plot of the Halloween movies. We made way too big of a desire to have that movie have a plot.
And who hasn't been there? I mean,
really? So, all right. Well, Karen, and everybody, thank you for that. We're going to move on to our last story. Talk about something equally terrifying, and that's local city government.
That's right.
This is the Disneyland Hotel. The excitement begins the moment you arrive as you walk into the lobby filled with colorful Disney decor and those friendly Disney cast members waiting to serve you.
David, what's going on at Disneyland?
This is about Walt Disney Company put on hold plans to build their new fancy 5-star resort hotel in their shopping district because of a feud they're having with the city of Anaheim over tax subsidies that Disney feels that they still deserve for some reason. All right, I'll read the story and stop editorializing. The dispute centers on a $267 million tax break that Anaheim City Council approved way back in 2016. For a 700-room hotel that was going to spread over the parking lot of
the downtown Disney parking lot.
Yeah, the downtown Disney parking lot. And then Disney changed the location to now be over the ESPN zone, the Rainforest Cafe, part of the Earl of Sandwich, which still just hacks my cheese because that was just the best place to eat in all of the entire Disneyland resort. If you're in Florida, go to the one in Florida at Disney Springs. You will thank Chris, as you should, because it's amazing. So those businesses were closed in June to make way for the new construction, which I was there last week and was stunned it hadn't already started, but this explains why. The new hotel was supposed to open in 2021, making it the fourth Disney-owned hotel at the resort. So the move to stop construction was in response to a letter that they got from the city of Anaheim on August 6th, where the city attorney wrote to Disney saying that the change in the site of the location of the hotel meant that the tax break they had won is no longer applicable. So it said, Disney responded with, given the city's position that our project does not comply with the requirements of the agreement, you've given us no other choice other than to put construction of the hotel on indefinite hold.
That is such a dramatic, what a dramatic statement.
As someone who has two young teen daughters, this rings very, I've heard this recently, no other choice.
They don't like your subsidies. Either
they do not. Clearly, they don't.
Lack of subsidies, apparently.
Lack of, and the subsidies to chore relationship they think is out of whack, but it's not. So that was a letter from their chief counsel for the Disneyland Resort. So the hotel was supposed to be at 1401 Disneyland Drive, but since the hotel project was announced, they got a 20-year tax break. Disneyland Resort changed the hotel location to a larger site at Downtown Disney, making the address 1601. Disneyland Drive. So the city decided, well, it's a different location. Our tax break only applied to that location. And let me explain what the deal was. Anaheim would have to reimburse the resort for 70% of the hotel occupancy tax for 20 years. And after 20 years, the city could collect the entire tax, which is 15% of whatever the overnight rate is. It also worked with similar tax breaks to two other Four Diamond hotels that aren't Disney property, one on Catella and one on South Harbor Boulevard. The problem is, what did you want?
No, and those are formerly known as, if anybody's ever been to the Anaheim area, the Annabella Hotel.
Okay.
That was across, literally, across Catella from California Adventure is one of those locations that got, it was a very popular hotel with convention people. It was a very popular hotel with people going into the parks. So that was one of them. I don't know where the other one is, but the Annabella was, definitely, one of those.
Okay. The problem was there was a city council election, and some people that were very pro Disney didn't win the election. And the city realized, and to me, this makes sense, that Disney made $13 billion in profit. Not, that's after taxes, after all their expenses, $13 billion. And they're demanding the city give them $267 million tax break.
That $13 billion has got to go use to prop up other failing areas of the company.
Well, it does.
So that nobody knows that those other areas are failing.
It has to go pay for getting Fox, because what I want to see is Simpsons characters running around Disneyland. Anyway, so the city of Anaheim, the old city council, basically gave away a huge gift to this incredibly profitable company that doesn't even pay their employees very much. And so the new city council is like, if you want to be a responsible civic partner, you should pay taxes like every other company.
How dare you?
Exactly. And like in the story earlier that you'd read, SeaWorld pays its taxes to the city of San Diego, but Disney doesn't want to pay its taxes. And it's like a football team. Football teams are convinced. NFL's like, if you pay for everything, maybe we'll show up. And studies show it doesn't really help. So, and another press release I saw, they're like, this is stopping 1,000 construction jobs and 1,500 permanent jobs that the city of Anaheim is stopping. It's like, well, maybe you should pay the tax rate that every other hotel has to pay
$13 billion. Were just having a conversation about this yesterday, where Chris mentioned that they thought they were going to be generating all these jobs, but then they were like, oh, but wait, we closed down all these places, so maybe we're not generating quite as much as we thought we were.
That's one of the city of Anaheim's arguments, was that the location changed, and because you've closed these other restaurants, that affects the numbers. I think it was an excuse the new city council used to get the city out of a bad deal. Because if Anaheim's got some great parts, Anaheim has some parts that are not so great. And it could use that tax money.
Turn my microphone back on. Part of the problem is, I believe that Anaheim went to district elections rather than what's referred to as at-large elections. So
yes, that's spreading.
Yeah. Well, it's part of a lawsuit that Karen and I were talking about this, because that's what we do in our free time. We were talking about this yesterday. There was a lawsuit a few years ago that I believe it originated in the Bay Area, that said, hey, why are all the members of this one particular city council from within a 2 mile square radius of each other? And so there was a lawsuit, and the court system in California agreed. And so now every city has got to go to district elections, district based elections. It's happening in my city where I live. So
mine too.
Ours too. Yeah.
So
I don't live in a real city.
It's like Karen lives in an unincorporated area.
She lives in a floating city.
I live
in clouds.
An unincorporated area of LA County.
Because she's a magical princess.
So,
I preferred my story of you living in a floating city.
Right, no, that cloud city. Karen is the administrator. She walks around with capes. Cloud city.
Should the dude follow her with a weird headset around his ears?
All right. So part of this is, so now these underrepresented parts of Anaheim are saying, wait a second. So now they've elected council members from their area to the Anaheim City Council, where before everyone that worked on the Anaheim City Council was essentially from the Disney Resort area.
Yeah.
And so now these people, why is the Disneyland Resort area, the resort, Anaheim Resort is what they call it, getting all of these things, and we don't see any of this profit. It doesn't extend out much past where Disneyland is. They spend all of the money in this one particular area, and we're not getting any of this. So that is the genesis of this whole, sort of, not, I won't say anti-Disney, but they're certainly less friendly to Disney's wants and needs.
I wouldn't call it anti-Disney. I would say they just wanted there to be a level playing field. And it makes sense you would give a deal to Walt when the thing was new, and you would give him, you know, help when the company's new. But when it's making tens of billions of dollars every single year, it doesn't make sense for them not to pay their fair share. Everyone else pays their fair share.
But here's,
what are they, an NFL team? What is this?
Here's where I will side with Disney a little bit. Number one, I think, and I'm going to get myself in a little bit of trouble here. I think sometimes you have to do business this way. I think Disney is not special. It's not an island unto itself. All across America, you give the film industry in Los Angeles just learned this lesson. If you don't, now I don't think Disneyland's going anywhere, but if you don't give businesses these breaks that they're looking for, they will go to places where they are. I think in Disneyland's case, they're not going to pack up and move Disneyland. I don't think, but what they will do
that would be
is,
awesome.
But they'll just stop investing in the area. They'll stop investing in infrastructure. They'll stop investing in new hotels. Don't forget, the city of Anaheim owns the parking structure that Disney that and they
that hella crazy ridiculously expensive parking structure.
And they I mean so there's been this sort of give take and yeah Disney's taken a little bit more than it's given, but there's also always been this sort of symbiotic relationship between Disney and the city of Anaheim, and now it's starting to tilt the other direction. The other thing I want to point out is less than 24 hours after the story broke that Disneyland was pulling the plug, the Anaheim City Council released a statement basically saying, whoa, let's not get crazy here. So,
yeah,
you know, and here's where I will also say, like, Anaheim has a convention center because of Disneyland.
Yes.
Anaheim is on the map because of Disneyland. And while I think that the city should do more to spread its resources, you're talking about a city that had the potential 50 years ago to or 60 years ago to just be another Garden Grove or another Stanton. So I think it's in the city's best interest, to work with Disneyland. And I think they should.
I agree with you. I agree. And they've done a lot of stuff to, like, the anti-skyline ordinance to keep the sight lines in the park clear. And they've done a lot. And I think Anaheim should do a lot. But then there gets a point, like with the parking garage, where they are selling it back to Disney for a dollar. Like that, right, that whole story is just the city. Everybody in Anaheim has to pay for it. So this multi-billion dollar company can get it for free. And that's where I would.
This is also why. Well, this is also why we didn't get Disney Sea in Long Beach, because Disney wanted subsidies and Disney wanted the city of Long Beach to pay for basically cleaning up the waterfront at Long Beach Harbor where the Queen Mary is. And so Disney said, "Fine, we're just going to go build it in Tokyo." Which is, again, Disneyland's not going to pack up and leave, but I think they'll just make these investments elsewhere.
And the Disney Sea, that Long Beach thing, was also a ploy to get more out of Anaheim. That's how that resort district got made. Was because they said, we're going to build this in Long Beach and here, you know, if we get these tax breaks. And so Anaheim was, yes, yes, yes. And Long Beach was, maybe we will. And Anaheim caved, and that's how we got the resort district.
John has been very quiet this episode.
And he's got a voice like it.
Well, no, I'm just listening.
We just haven't been hearing your dulcet tones.
Yeah.
Your comments. John, do you have any thoughts on any of this?
I like David's idea.
Wow.
Actually, I would think
extraordinarily short list.
I would think it'd be cool if they made a second one, like Disneyland California 2, or you know what I mean?
Like a franchise? Yeah. Like a Courtyard by Marriott?
I'm sorry. I just saw what John's going to be doing, and I'm like anxious to move on because I am upset a bit.
Okay. Well, let's wrap this up. So we're going to, again, that was a lot of like civics lessons. So I certainly hope nobody was listening to this while driving in heavy traffic. But, I think it's interesting that Disneyland threatened to pull the plug. They said, fine, we're just not going to do it. And Anaheim, I think, panicked a little bit.
So here's the deal, in all fairness, whether or not I believe what they are doing is right, at the end of the day, Disneyland is a business.
Correct. Yeah.
And they are beholden not necessarily to the people that live in the city of which they are based in, but rather to their stockholders and their shareholders.
And that's where the city comes in, because the city is beholden and is obligated to work in the best interest of the people that live in that city.
Couldn't disagree with you more.
Okay.
I'm a firm believer that stockholders should go to hell. That companies that are in a city have a responsibility to those people.
I will see you there.
All right. Fine. Good. That, like, they have responsibility to their employees and to their customers and not to stockholders. When companies start thinking about what's good for their shareholders, that's when companies get in trouble. And it's used as an excuse to treat people badly and to demand cheap things from cities that can't really afford it, just in the name of some anonymous. It's just a bunch of rich guys on Wall Street. They're going to be okay.
I do not live on Wall Street, nor am I rich, but I feel like on that note, maybe we should move on.
Shareholder. Okay.
So again, we'll provide more information on our website.
Sorry for starting a class war in the middle of your podcast.
That's fine. It's not the first time and it won't be the last.
It will not.
Again, thank you guys thank you, David, I know you had some thoughts on that and feelings, and clearly we discussed those. So we're going to move on and we're going to move into our final discussion phase. Knott's Berry Farm over the last week has released its new structure for annual pass holders.
Welcome one and all. Y'all come have a ball. Things are very fine. Riding on the old Knottsberry
And so here to tell, and so we'll get to hear John talk more, Karen.
Yeah.
So here to talk about this, we kind of researched a little bit about what's going on over at Knott's Berry Farm.
I know that a lot of people listen to the podcast to hear John's I listened to the podcast to hear John's, so I wanted to make sure they weren't disappointed.
Okay. So we're going to kick it over to Brandis and John, and they're going to give us sort of the lowdown on what's happening with Knott's Berry Farm season passes. Guys, take it away.
So Knott's passes went on sale August 16th and may be purchased at the park or online at knotts.com at the price listed through October 28th, when prices will go up. Payment plans are available for both passes and add-ons, but only online. Taxes and fees will be applied to all purchases. All passes include ultimate visits to Knott's Berry Farm with no blackout dates. The park only closes on Christmas Day and during very bad weather. Discounted hotel stays, discounted Scary Farm tickets, and on select days, discounted park tickets for friends and families and early park entry, which we love. Regular and Gold Pass holders receive 10% discounts on most food and merchandise, and Platinum Pass holders receive a 20% discount. So the Platinum Passes are $220. They include free parking and access to all Cedar Fair parks. They enjoy all benefits of Gold Pass plus free parking, with the added benefit of enjoying all those exclusive privileges at the Cedar Fair parks across the country, including California's Great America and Cedar Point and more. So we have a Platinum Pass, don't we?
No, we had a Platinum Pass once, and I downgraded it because you could just add on parking. I mean, we're not traveling for the other parks.
Okay. Did that one come with... Oh, never mind. Okay. All right, so the Gold Passes are $149, and this is Knott's Berry Farm plus Knott's Soak City. Enjoy unlimited visits to Knott's Berry Farm and Knott's Soak City Water Park all season long. Plus, enjoy early entry to Knott's Berry Farm and Knott's Soak City on select days and special discounts on food and merchandise, hotel stays, and Knott's Scary Farm. Regular renewal is an initial payment of $14.25 down with 11 payments of $8.25. New pass price is 11 payments of $9 after initial payment of $16, or $115 total.
Remember, they said the prices go up in October.
And I'm very sorry. I just want to ask real quickly. Did you just say $149?
Yes,
for he did.
An entire year?
That you can make on payments.
Yeah.
That you can go to both Knott's Berry Farm and Knott's Soak City?
Yes.
Correct.
David's 149 for an entire year.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
David's got a great story about Knott's passes. I want to.
It's $149. The price of a ticket. Here's the weird Disneyland thing.
We ended up going a lot, and we really liked it. The only weird thing was their Camp Snoopy. Our girls were too small to go on any of the rides in their children's section, but they could go on the log ride. That was perfectly fine. Shoot them down a log. That's fine.
Because you're holding on to them on the log ride.
I guess. But at Disneyland,
and
they can go on everything.
And also go back to our second episode where we discussed the injuries on the log ride.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because the kid was too small to go on. And sorry, I derailed the conversation. Continue, John.
Okay. Regular passes are $127. These are unlimited visits from now till December 31st. Visit Knott's Berry Farm as many times as you want all season with the regular pass, plus enjoy early entry to select rides during the summer and special discounts on food and merchandise, hotel stays, Knott's Scary Farm. Does not include Knott's Soak City Water Park. So,
but you get the discount or you don't get the discount?
You get the discount. You get the discount for Halloween Haunt.
All pass holders get a discount for Halloween.
So the renewal pricing is the initial payment of $10.75 down plus 11 payments of $6.75 a month. New pass pricing is 11 payments of $7.50 after initial payment of $12.50 or $95 total. New pass holders receive one free visit this year plus $14.99 additional visits for the remainder of 2018. Free visit and $14.99 additional visits not valid for Scary Farm or special events. Renewing pass holders receive a limited time renewal price and one free bring a friend ticket, valid any fall daytime from September 8th to December 14th. You can do add-ons, which would be seasonal pass parking. This includes Knott's Scary Farm for $70, dining plan for regular and gold for $102, for platinum it's $117, all season fun picks for $44.99. I don't know what that is.
The fun pics are the ride photos, basically.
Oh, got it.
And the people that hassle you as you walk in the front gate to take your picture.
Oh, okay. All season fast lane for $4.99. Wow, that seems like a lot.
That's $499.
Yeah, sorry, $499.
You know what's funny? I saw that and I was like, $499, like a month? Like, that's not bad. And then I went, oh, it's $499.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Is that like a fast pass?
Yeah,
yes, that's a new thing. So I'm wondering how they're going to implement that.
How very interesting. Can we go back really quickly? Yeah. What is this dining pass thing?
It's actually something I've been wanting to do, but I haven't been able to convince myself to spend the money. Our whole point of getting Knott's passes is we could go for a date or like half a day with the kids and not have to buy food. That's like the most expensive thing.
Let me talk. So what I'll do is if you guys want, I will pay for a 1 day dining pass for you guys.
Yeah.
And so you guys come back and report on that.
Wait,
so
wait. This 100 and something isn't for the year?
It's for the year.
It's for the year.
It's $30. Okay, right, no, it's $14 a day right now or 100 for the year. So you get three meals a day. Three meals a day.
From their very specific list of places and items that you can eat.
Not Mrs. Knott's Fried Chicken?
No.
No, so they have a list of restaurants you can visit, and then they have a separate list of things that you can order at that restaurant. It's actually not a bad list. It's actually.
But I feel like for $14 for three meals for the day at an amusement park, that seems like a pretty good deal.
No, that is a really great deal. Their food, like I said, their food package is a great deal. It's just I haven't been able to convince myself to spend $100, you know, because there's four of us, so it'd be $400 for a year of food.
If this is illegal, make this go away. But maybe your family of four just pays for one adult and one child.
Actually, we were actually looking to do just add it to the adults and split a meal.
But I eat too much.
Well, I was thinking because your whole thing was, you know, you were trying not to do the meals so much there. It should be more like snacks. So between an adult and a child, you just, you know, like you, it was just, it should be enough to share as like a little snack.
Yeah.
Right?
No. I mean, I'm sure there are, but not for John. Clearly not for John.
I'm hungry.
And I don't know if it includes drinks. Because Knott's Berry Farm's water tastes nasty.
Okay, duly noted.
Because it comes from the log ride.
Do not.
Yeah.
Just funnel it into the drinking fountain system.
Okay, so I just want to say I'm upset about this change right now because it said in October they're raising their prices, but if you've been a pass holder forever, your renewal isn't up until January. So basically, they're going to be raising their prices on me unless I want to, like, how do I join now? My pass isn't expired.
Right, your pass isn't expired.
They're being very unfair at this point, so I'm going to have to contact them and see. But, like, right now, I'm really angry because they're going to give us a more expensive one as, like, a loyal customer. And
so you can't renew. Basically, you can't renew. And maybe they're
going to. And not only that, these prices right here have gone up. Right. They haven't gone up that much, but that's if you renew now. So what's it going to cost me in January?
Can you like buy a renewal that doesn't go into effect until after your pass expires?
I don't know.
So, really? two things. So, when you find out what the resolution is, let us know. We'll work on,
Brandy's taking deep breaths. I need Brandy's that yoga.
Brandy's really mad right now. So we'll find out. We'll dig a little bit more into this and we're going to see what's going on. If I'm understanding you correctly, they're going to start the renewals now in September, but your pass doesn't expire until January.
So right now they're starting their new pass. So everyone who's a pass holder to get this, you know, are up until now, your pass was from January 1st to December 31st.
There was a lot of talk about them going to an annual pass.
Yes.
But it doesn't seem like they're doing that. Sounds like they're just going to go keep it the season pass model.
Wait. Am I misunderstanding this? Maybe my anger is.
It sounds like they're keeping the season pass model and not going to an annual pass.
Oh, okay, then that's okay.
So clearly, she, ladies and gentlemen, she is fine.
Because
she is A-okay. Do not worry.
Okay, but they still did raise their prices.
They still did raise their prices. Yeah, but I think that's the thing is that you can. It's going to still be a season pass because that you get one free admission for the rest of 2018 if you are new. Like I say, if I bought a pass tomorrow or today, you get one free admission into the park for the rest of 2018, and then your pass begins January 1st. So it's going to go. Yeah. It's going to go January to January. So maybe that is, I don't know. It's not going a year from when you purchase it. It's going a year from January.
If you work for Knott's Berry Farm and you know how this works, please let us know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we are very confused. On a side note, ladies and gentlemen.
This will be the most edited episode in the history of the show.
On a side note, I am, however, very excited about the Disneyland Bring a Friend to the Park Day.
Hey, so you remember that story we did on SeaWorld automatically renewing passes?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, look what's right here.
Oh, they're automatically. Yeah, there's an auto. They're doing auto renewals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Knott's Berry Farm?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was like, are we doing a thing spreading on
the you can opt. So they're being a little bit more forthcoming about it. Like, you can opt out of the auto renewal, but yeah.
I hope you won't notice.
Yeah.
So let's see. Went on sale August 16th. Maybe purchased at the park or online. I don't know. I'll have to get back to you on how angry I'm going to be.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to it in our next episode.
I feel like we should make these little, like, Brandis emojis showing her, like, happy to, like, super mad.
You know. We totally do that.
I've seen all of those emojis, by the way.
All right. So the other thing is, what did you say before we started here? You want to purchase a...
I wanted to purchase a season pass for Knott's Scary Farm, and John won't let me.
Why not?
I'm not the boss of you. I'm just saying, you know, spend your money a little bit more wisely. I mean, our money.
You like how you said your money. I mean, my money. I mean, our money.
Yeah.
I whatever think that it what it comes down to is, how often are you going to be going? Are you going to be going enough that it makes it worth it?
We'll see. Okay. So last year we went, so every year we go once and then wish we could go more. Last year we went twice, and going twice pays for the pass. I would like to go several times more.
Maybe she could get it and you don't get it. So this way, if you only want to go once, then you've done your one time, but she can go all the other times with other people.
It's not that I don't want to go additionally. It just seems like you can get enough out of it one time to make it, I don't know. It just seems like one time.
Sometimes when I've gone to Knott's Scary Farm in the past, I sometimes wish that I could go back because it's so
crowded.
So crowded. And it's, you just don't get a chance to do everything. And sometimes I'm like, oh man, I wish I could have seen that, you know, or I wish I could have done that again. But, you know, the line's now 6 hours long and, you know.
Not just because we're the only women here and we should stick together, but I feel like if she's going to go twice and it's going to pay for itself, then she should be given the opportunity to get the pass to go twice and potentially more times with other people. What if I was like, you know what, Brandis?
I don't think John cares what you do.
I'm going to take the plunge. I want Brandis to shepherd me through this world of, you know, scariness.
Well, that's cool. You can buy our ticket.
you can go with us to do the Halloween buffet.
Yeah.
Knott's Scary Farm.
See, that's another thing. So that's going to be awesome.
If it's food, I'm in.
It's food.
I'm going to say this. The food is not worth the cost. It's the early entry that is worth the cost.
Yeah, if I do this Halloween buffet, I have to go into the park?
You can't buy the buffet without buying a ticket, but you don't have to use that ticket.
Do you not go, Karen?
Oh, dear.
Karen doesn't like getting scared.
I haven't been in a really long time. I'm those people that annoy the crap out of you because you just scream and scream. The last time I went was when I was in high school.
Oh, Karen's so going.
So I'm like, yeah, scream, look, scream, scream the whole way through, scream, scream, scream.
That's me. I get a sore throat.
Oh, I mean, God. If you go with me, you will come out with like nail marks in your arms.
Oh, that's him.
You know, bruises. I mean, you also leave nail marks in Brandis's arms?
No. Well, I get really scared. What I do is like...
He pushes me in front of him.
Yeah.
I'll
throw her in the room first and see what happens, and then kind of like sneak in like a fly on the wall, like hoping they don't see me.
Here's my question, because I went...
All right, last one.
Like, obviously decades ago, but like... before they, you know, like they kind of space people out, but since there's so many people now, is this just like a line of people that never ends? So you can't
really
get scared?
And like they let you in a little bit at a time.
There's parts where it clogs up because somebody will get scared and like not want to go.
Yeah. And then you don't get scared, but yeah, generally they let you in a little at a time. Like on Paranormal, there's two different paths you could take. So when you go in, they kind of like separate everyone to different sides
like
of
a path of less scariness?
Inner chamber? No.
Karen, it's called Knott's Scary Farm.
You could go to Camp Spooky.
All right. I'm for that.
All right. On that note, anything else on our original topic of the annual passes? Was that all we had?
That was it.
Yeah. I'll let you guys know how angry I am later.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Well, wrapping up here, it is time for corrections and retractions. All right. So in corrections and retractions, once again, if you listen to our last episode, you realize that we don't know the name of anything. So the name of the Camp Snoopy Railway, does anybody know? I found out.
Oh, no.
We were just there yesterday and I forgot to look.
So the name of the railway in Camp Snoopy is the Grand Sierra Railway.
Oh, I knew that.
It was close. We were super close. Okay. And so then the other, this one was on me. So I said Mater's Jungle Jamboree. Mater's got a lot of holidays going on. So during Christmas time, Mater's Jungle Jamboree plays Christmas and Hanukkah songs, not Kwanzaa songs, as I said in the last episode.
Because Kwanzaa was invented by a professor from Cal State Long Beach and as someone who went to Cal State Fullerton, I don't want anything to do with anything from Cal State Long Beach.
Thank you for
that. They have songs? Does Kwanzaa have songs?
Probably.
But they were written by someone from Cal State Long Beach, so again, that's the problem.
If you know a Kwanzaa song, please let us know.
If they do, they don't play them on Mater's Jingle Jamboree. It's Mater's Jingle Jamboree. I wrote Jungle Jamboree.
Yeah, I was like, why does Jungle have to do with Christmas?
So Mater's Jingle Jamboree plays Christmas and Hanukkah songs, not Kwanzaa songs. All right. You can connect with Vacationland online by visiting our website, vacationlandpodcast.com. You can Facebook us, facebook.com/vacationlandpodcast. You can Instagram us, VLP Podcast. You can contact us on Twitter at Vacationland Show. And you can always email us with your comments and vacationlandpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, if you're listening to us on iTunes or watching us on YouTube, make sure to like, rate, and subscribe, and also leave us some comments. That helps us with our ratings, and then our podcast gets pushed up higher to the front. So again, if you're watching or if you're listening to us on iTunes or watching us on YouTube, make sure to subscribe, rate, and comment. All right. So that's going to do it for this episode. I'd like to thank everybody for joining us today and getting up and coming in. Thank you, David. And thank you, Brandis. Thank you, John. And thank you, Karen.
You are welcome.
All right. Well, we hope you've enjoyed this episode. Once again, my name is Chris Ramirez. I am the host and executive producer of the show. We hope you've enjoyed the show and we hope you enjoy the rest of your stay in vacation land. See you in 2 weeks.